Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. There's trouble in MAGA world. Donald Trump successfully brought together a diverse coalition of voters to win the presidency for the second time. But it's an open question now if this diverse coalition can govern. Soon we will learn what MAGA is really about. Crosstalking MAGA, I'm joined by my guest, Angie Hwang in Miami. She is a Miami Executive District Committee woman. Also in Florida, we have Tom Luongo. He is publisher of the Gold, Goats, and Guns blog and newsletter. And in Nashville, we cross to Steve Gill. He is an attorney and conservative TV and radio political analyst. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Okay, let's go first to Angie in Miami. In a few days' time, we will have the return of Donald Trump as president of the United States. Obviously, his political banner is MAGA. But in the weeks preceding to his inauguration, we've seen a lot of fissures and squabbles within the MAGA movement. What does MAGA mean to you? And when I ask what it means to you, does MAGA mean something different to everyone? Is it really a movement, or is it something that we all possess? We think we know what it is. Go ahead, Angie.
Well, MAGA is a very personal thing, but it is a movement. We've seen the mandate that President Trump has gotten to change America and make it right again and make it great again. So you're going to see that. You're already seeing that. He's not even in office yet. It's been 2 months since Donald Trump has been elected, and you're seeing the world shift monumentally, things that Biden couldn't even do in 4 years. So it's a major movement. I think you're going to see a lot of changes in the first 100 days of the MAGA movement and Donald Trump. And, you know, that's going to evolve as well. It's going to evolve into policies, into geopolitics. And we better be, you know, we better sit tight because there's going to be a lot of pivoting and a lot of big changes in the world.
Okay, Tom, essentially the same question to you, but with the added caveat, does Elon Musk represent MAGA in your mind? Does Steve Bannon? These are very different people, okay? And there are other characters within the Trump orbit that are just as different from others. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, neither of those men represent what MAGA actually is. I think MAGA at this point is a complete overhaul of the way we do things. I was thinking about this for my latest writings, and I really do believe that we're at a moment where everybody in America is feeling that we either evolve or we wither. And we're at that inflection point. And if we don't evolve, then we will wither. And I think the fires in California are a perfect example of, you know, the kind of an emblematic symbol of the rot within the existing system. And I think that that is what ultimately we want. And it means different things to different people. And within my own community, I can see it. We have divisions all the time about what, you know, and the anxiety over getting it done, I think, is the biggest impediment to getting anything done. And a lot of people are out there stoking those anxieties in order to try and not get it done, because, of course, MAGA is the enemy of what I would like to call Davos, or the European globalists, who have a much different agenda for the future. And Donald Trump is, of course, orthogonal to that. So now, and once we get into that can of worms, it opens up a lot of real complications, which then are difficult to explain to the average person, to the average viewer. So
I mentioned Steve Bannon and Elon Musk. I mean, it's not a bad thing that they're in the same movement. I think actually it could be good, because we need very vigorous debate. That's one of the reasons why the Democrats were sent packing, and hopefully packing for a long time to come. But Steve, I mean, when we look at the visa controversy and all that, I mean, very diverse views and very passionate views as well. Is that going to be something that's going to be debated within this administration, or one side has to win over the other, like on the issue of tariffs? Go ahead, Steve in Nashville.
I think it does mean different things to different people, but like a Venn diagram, there is overlap of what policies or what issues people embrace, even if they don't really embrace everything. You know, what's also interesting is that MAGA is not limited to the United States, although it's Make America Great Again. I mean, you look at Italy. Maloney is embracing MAGA for the most part. Hungary. You've got Milieu in Argentina. They've been implementing MAGA principles and policies like Trump is about to do in the United States. So it's not even limited to the U.S. Now, to the left, MAGA means apocalyptic disaster. It means epic, horrific things. Dogs and cats sleeping together. It is not going to be that bad. And frankly, the American people have embraced it. It is different than what Republicans have done in the past. It is populism rather than elitism. And I think that's where it's going to be fun to watch.
That's exactly where I wanted to go, Steve. Thank you very much, Angie, because that's what I am. That's what I find attractive about MAGA, is that it's not Republican per se, because the Republican Party has been part of the problem. And it's still the problem if you look at the Senate, okay? And I would even argue even within the House. There still needs to be a lot of things fleshed out there. But Angie, Steve brings up a germane point here, is that this is also a departure from the Republican Party, which means a departure from the duopoly. Go ahead, Angie.
Yeah, and I love it. This is the new Republican class, guys. We are the old Democrats, actually. Yep. I mean, we are the JFK Democrats. This is exactly where this comes from. The left went way too left for anyone's taste. Anyone who is moderate, who's working, who's common sense, they can't be part of that party. And every single day I see Florida leaders, where I am, leaving the Democratic Party, because who wants to be on that ship anymore? Look, the right, this new Republican Party, it welcomes everybody. And we, you know, Black, Latinos, Asians, whites, everyone can come on board on this party. And we want to grow this party because it is the common sense party at this point. The left went too far, and this is the repercussions.
Yeah, well, Tom, what happened was, I mean, we'll be dissecting this for a long time to come. And Trump's return is a remarkable political event in American history. And I would even say in Western democracy in general, as considering how Western democracy is dwindling. But, you know, one of the things that and what makes me very hopeful, I want to be hopeful, is that the Republican Party, the MAGA movement more specifically, is embracing class politics, which the Democrats have jettisoned. We have to remember the Bernie bros, they didn't just go away. They voted for Trump. Tom.
Yeah, they voted for Trump in 2016, too, by the way. Yeah, you know, and I love Steve's point about Maloney. This is a different thing. The goal of the way Trump ran the campaign this time, he did exactly what I expected him to do, which is he was doing his very best to grab the people in the center who tend to default Democrat because they can't bring themselves to vote Republicans. They got that part of the center to say, yep, no, it's okay. And then when you had people like Jamie Dimon come out early on in the primaries and say it's okay to vote for Nikki Haley, it's not because he was a neocon. It's because he was trying to tell his Wall Street friends it's okay to vote for a Republican, not Nikki Haley. And then you've seen since then Dimon shift to, no, he likes Trump. He likes what he's doing. So Wall Street's had his blessing at the same time as Trump was able to go out to the soccer mom set of the center and go grab people of normal people like Tulsi Gabbard and RFK and all of that, and bring in, you know, former Democrats, yeah, you know, guys like even Mark Andreessen and all that stuff, that all those people that went on Joe Rogan in the last month of the campaign, yeah, were all very important players to get those people to say to themselves, okay, I have people that I respect are going to do this. I can do this.
Yeah, Steve, Tom brings up a fascinating point. Actually, I hadn't thought about it, is that it's I don't really want to vote Republican because of how the Republicans and the liberal media have been tarred. But you can vote for Donald Trump. Again, there are two different things for a lot of people. There are two different things for me. I see Angie nodding her head. She's agreeing. These are different. Donald Trump represents a movement that can mean a lot of things to a lot of people, but not necessarily the Republican Party. That was his political breakthrough. Steve.
Well, I think the question is, and it's hard to raise it before he even takes office again, what follows? I mean, he's a once in a millennia politician. He's done things that have broken politicians in the past, and he just sails on through it. I mean, this is a guy who's gone from McDonald's worker, garbage truck driver, and convicted felon to the White House. Can the next person for the Republican Party keep that coalition of Black, Hispanic, Latino, Democrats, moderate Republicans coalescing together? And I think that's going to be the real challenge for the Republicans. This is a Trump party, not necessarily a Republican party. And I'm not sure how they can hold that together moving forward.
That's the big question here. But, Angie, you were the first to bring it up. I'm sure, like the rest of you and our viewers, I'm really tired of the race card that the left always playing. And I'm hoping that this was a frontal assault against this kind of race baiting that we, the Democrats and the left, has been playing on us. It doesn't really matter. And that's what this election proved. It is more about a movement. And I want to stress that class is playing a role in here. And that's going to be a challenge for the MAGA movement moving forward. Go ahead, Angie.
No, absolutely. And, you know, just to harper on the point that there are people who, voters, who only voted for Donald Trump, but not down ballot Republicans this round, right? So we're looking at that data because we've barely ever seen that before. So that actually absolutely is right to Steve's point that Trump is a once in a millennia kind of candidate, and he pulled on through. Now, as far as race goes, well, you know, Democrats only have race. And I've been wondering all this time how Democrats keep voting against their own personal interests just to vote Democrat. And a lot of it has to do with race and gender and sexuality, because they see that trumping all other issues, including policy. So, and that is a phenomenon that I look at all the time when I look at candidates to run against incumbents. You know, if you knock out that offset, which is gender, sexuality, yep, race, then you can actually get to the policy. It's almost like that when you...
Yeah, well, it's like we have more important things to do. I think that's what the electorate is saying. All right, everybody, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on MAGA. Stay with our team. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing MAGA. Okay, let's go back to Angie in Miami. Over the last few hours, we had earth-shaking news, good news, a ceasefire coming into effect surrounding the conflict between the Israelis and Hamas. I don't want to go into the origin story here because a lot has been talked about that. I have very strong views on it, but we are talking about MAGA. And it is just really quite remarkable that Donald Trump, before he enters office, had to stomp his foot once and hard, and he got his way. And something that we were told for, 16, 18 months was impossible to solve. And that was an issue that is divided the American people, divided the Democratic Party, divided the Republican Party, and even divisions within the MAGA movement here. But there, on the hours before the inauguration, Donald Trump can claim, at least temporarily, ephemerally, that he has a foreign policy win, and he's not even president of the United States. Angie.
It's incredible. Look, this was a great first move by Donald Trump. It sets the stage for all the world policies he's going to be setting forward, especially with Marco Rubio at the helm as Secretary of State. This is a strong message. And if you see the inaugural photo that Donald Trump put out, it is very much like his mugshot. It is strong. He is not smiling. He's not kidding. He's not playing around. He is going to clean things up, and that is what he's delivering. And, you know, with the help of Qatar, I'm sure he put a lot of pressure there. They made that deal happen. Now, this is a great press release, right? What will actually happen in the first 100 days is really going to matter. It is a great thing to put out right before you're inaugurated. Even the Biden camp is saying Biden can even pull this off.
Well, I mean, Tom, I mean, add insult to injury. Biden is taking credit for it. I mean, you know, don't let the door hit your blank on the way out, okay? I mean, what a disgraceful man this is. He could have made that phone call himself, but he didn't have the guts to do it, okay? Tom, Israel has divided a lot of people in the United States within both parties here. But at the same time, you have Marco Rubio, you have Waltz, you have a lot of these people around him that are obviously portraying themselves as being very pro pro-Israel, very pro-Zionist. But at the same, Donald Trump used the Jeffrey Sachs video from a few months ago on his own Truth Social. I mean, it's his the people he's chosen are very uniform, but we still don't know what he himself actually thinks. Putting that video out of what Jeffrey Sachs said about Netanyahu was a remarkable event, maybe a historic event. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, similar to his remarks about Putin, Russia, and Ukraine a couple of days ago, which were when's the last time we heard foreign policy rationality about Russia from an American senior American politician? Never. Like, she's about to become the only other one is she's about to become director of national intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard. Right. So what I the risk here with the ceasefire, and I'm being pure strategist here. This is not my opinion. This is just me playing the game board. He's going to have problems.
Yep.
Right. He's got.
Yep.
Yeah. He's
going to
have problems.
Yep.
And within not only the movement itself, because it's the people who backed him and put him in power. And I think the thing we need to look at here is, what is Trump going to do next vis-a-vis Iran? Because getting the ceasefire with Hamas is one thing, but he has to secure Israel's future. OK, so it's a very tight rope to walk. And we have the Russians signing a strategic defense agreement with Iran this week. So now I've been saying for years that this is a solvable problem if the two big powers basically walk away from the area, securing their proxies and walking away and then leaving it to everybody else to sort out. With Erdogan and Damascus, right, we have the setup for it. So the question now is, how do you secure Israel's future and deal with the deal with this? And I think the solve, and I hate to say this, is that the theocracy in Iran has to go. And that may be on the horizon, folks. And not to say that, you know, that the theocracy, well, not Iran.
Yeah,
the
but Tom, let me throw it to Steve. I mean, that's what I presume is the quid pro quo about the ceasefire, is that we don't know what was given in return, complete annexation of the West Bank, a war against Iran. We don't know that, okay? We do know that the Israelis were forced to the table. That's all we know, okay? And we have no idea if it's going to work, all right? Because we have seen the Israelis repeatedly torpedo ceasefire talks, okay? Trump, remarkably, got Netanyahu to do it. Steve, Ukraine has already been mentioned here. Again, trouble in MAGA world, because first it was going to be solved in a day, which we, of course, all knew that was this bluster, okay? I never took it seriously. Nobody else did. But now it's going to be maybe 100 days. Now it's not going to be so easy. It's going to take time. Reality is showing its face here. This is going to be a very difficult thing to resolve. And the good thing is that people like J.D. Vance understand that. Trump appears to understand it from time to time, at least, but not all the other people around him. Keith Kellogg, he's fighting the Cold War still. I'm really disappointed with that envoy and many others that Trump has chosen. That's going to be a tough nut to crack. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, and all of these Fox News generals who are still telling us Ukraine is winning, they've been lying the whole time, and reality is about to come in. I think two things are going to happen. One, Trump from day one is going to change the pin at the anytime teller machine. So foreign leaders, whether it's Iran, whether it's Zelensky or anybody else, they're not going to be able to be digging their hands into the pockets of American taxpayers at will any longer. The ATM pin numbers being changed, Trump's going to clamp down on the checkbook. The other thing is, Trump really believes in personal connections in terms of his foreign policy. Policies matter, but people matter more to him. So whether it's dealing with Xi, whether it's dealing with Putin, whether it's dealing with Erdogan, personal relations are going to matter. You're already seeing that with Maloney in Italy. You're going to see that with Milieu in Argentina. Anybody in the world who's a leader who's not already recognized they better have a relationship with Trump is going to be on the outside looking in, which is why you've seen everybody trotting down to Mar-a-Lago. And just look at one of his other foreign policies. the U.S. may take over Greenland, or as many are calling it, Mara Igloo, to pay attention to that portion of the world.
Mara Igloo, I haven't heard that one there. Okay. Yeah. Angie, what's your take on that? Because, you know, one of the things over the course of the Biden administration is that, and there's a lot of good podcasts, a lot of bad ones, too. But, I mean, there's some interesting ones that say, where is the realism in American foreign policy? Where's the geopolitics? Well, eyeing Greenland is a very realist, okay? I mean, is it a moral thing? Is it a good thing? That's immaterial to politics when it comes to geopolitics, okay? And that's what a lot of people don't understand. Now, I could understand why Trump is talking about Greenland. It's sparsely populated, has lots of natural resources, geographically located. A lot of other countries would like to have control over Greenland. I get it, okay? I just don't understand why I can't have better relations with him. But anyway, Trump is thinking outside of the box. Panama, Canada. Who would have thought even a few weeks ago? I mean, this is really amazing. Angie.
No, absolutely. I mean, we laugh at it, but this is the great American expansion, right? We need more land. We need more resources. If we're going to be competitive in the next phase of the American history in our next generation, we need to expand some more, right? We need those things in order to compete with China, Russia, et cetera. So I think that is what the thinking is. Remember, the last expansion happened, I think it was in Alaska, correct? And that was to have eyes on China and Korea's and Russia. And I think that's what he's looking at as well. As you know, he's sending his son.
And Angie, it was really cheap, okay? It was a really good deal, okay? Well, Trump is looking for a good deal. Trump is looking for a good deal. Keep going, Angie.
Well, no, I mean, I think that's what ultimately all this is about. The Panama Canal, we've long known that the Chinese have, mainly controlled the ports there. So rightly so, is sending Kevin Cabrera from Miami down there to handle that. All of this stuff is good for America. And he knows he wants to be that guy. He wants to be a legend. And this is going to be recorded in the history books as such. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if he went to other countries and said, hey, how about a deal? He's going to ask for it. He's the guy who's just going to ask. No one else is asking. Now, whether or not, Denmark is going to allow this to happen, maybe, maybe not. I don't know if he can really strong arm this.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's been a bipartisan effort over the years, this to completely diss the Europeans and the European Union. Let's face it, Tom, if Donald Trump wants Greenland, he's going to get it. And there's no one that's going to stop him. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, no, he is. And this is, and I want to finish up on my original point, because it actually dovetails directly into this. Greenland represents the pincer move against Europe. Okay, the ceasefire in Iran with Israel and Iran, cutting Europe off from the Middle East, and now Greenland is saying, look, we're done with you meddling in our elections. Now we have Keir Starmer. We know that the British and Davos have been meddling in our elections and meddling in our affairs forever. We have people at the top of our government who don't work for the United States. The Steve Bannons think they work for China. I think they work for the European Union. I think I'm right. I think Steve Bannon's wrong. And I think that's what Greenland represents, among other things. And when you put the totality of this together and you look at what's going on in the financial markets, what's going on with Fed policy and the movement and the way the we're going to price euro dollars in the future, it's very clear that everybody is done with the EU-SSR, including the Russians, the Chinese, and everybody else, and they can all get together and say, you know what? You want to be communist, you have fun. We're done. And leave us alone and leave us out of it. We have a world to rebuild.
Well, Tom, as long as you buy our energy,
I mean, there's that. But what's really important is that on Monday or Tuesday, he's going to speak virtually at Davos 2025.
All right, everybody.
That is my speed. That's what I'm watching.
I'm going to ask everybody to hold your breath until Monday. Okay, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Florida and in Nashville. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.